We've been sold the idea that financial independence is all about some number on your account statement. Or even worse, that you don't qualify because of where you started out. That's just not true. It's not about some well-kept secret of the wealthy. It's about finding the right information and knowing how to apply it. On the Get Ready for the Future show, we're answering your questions so you can start making real financial change today. The journey to true financial independence begins right here, and it starts with you.
Here to help people discover, protect, and share true financial independence. It's the mission of GenWealth Financial Advisors, and it is why we are on the air here on the Get Ready for the Future show. Hello again and welcome. My name is Scott Inman, John Shrewsberry alongside to answer your questions on today's show as we do each and every week in the middle, John, of March Madness, my favorite time of year in sports.
Lot of excitement. Love March Madness.
It is crazy. Anything can happen in March Madness.
And usually does.
You have to be prepared for the unexpected. Not all that unlike retirement and true financial independence.
That's right.
You have to be prepared, right, for the unexpected, because the unexpected is going to come. If you have questions for us, here's how to get them to us. You can call or text to 501-381-5228. Again, it's 501-381-5228. You can leave a voicemail or you can shoot us a text. You can also send us an email at show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Get those questions in this week, and maybe on next week's show, you'll hear yours answered on the air, just like Whitney did. Whitney from Jonesboro is first on the show, and here's the question. I'm 59, no debt, making catch-up contributions and planning to retire in the next few years. My husband and I want to travel in retirement and live comfortably. We also have the desire to leave a good sum to my kids and their children. What should our investment strategy be? We're going to get to the investment strategy in just a minute. Whitney, first of all, kudos for not having any debt. I'm glad she told us about that, because when you think about wanting to travel and live comfortably, you're going to have some margin between your expenses and your discretionary income or your total income. And having that discretionary income has a better chance of happening if you have no debt.
Yeah, and having no debt, it puts you in a situation where you don't have to worry about enriching someone else's financial independence. You're enriching your own, because that's literally what paying interest is. You're enriching the bank, whoever the lending institution is that is giving you that money, and you're really borrowing money you hope to make in the future. And if you're close to 59 and retirement is within your immediate future, then you don't need to be transferring wealth from your pocket to the bank's pocket. You need to be hanging on to it. So yes, kudos to no debt. Now, Whitney says that they want to travel and live comfortably. Well, that's all in the eye of the beholder, yes, obviously. Right. Scott, I can tell you recently, I just took a trip to South Florida, and you talk about living comfortably down there. Those folks live comfortably because they've got some incredible prices on real estate down there. So, you know, it literally is, there are some houses that are listed for over $1 million that I'm not real sure I'd want to live in.
And so you
think about the disparity there between what you see here in Arkansas, that is clearly affordable living way below that standard. You really got to get more specific is what I'm saying about what Whitney is asking for here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that those don't come with no debt, though. Most of those people probably have some pretty big
debt. Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah. So, Whitney, you're doing better than that. But, yeah, to John's point, what does that look like when you say you want to travel and live comfortably? You know, most people, when you start developing your retirement income, it needs to start with a budget. You're still going to have expenses. We've already outlined that you have no debt, but you know you're going to have expenses. There's going to be a monthly income that is required just to pay the bills. That has to be taken care of first before you can really think about what live comfortably and travel means, and really before you can even think about your investment strategy. I think it's worth pointing out there. The question here, John, is what should our investment strategy be? But when you think about the way you prepare for retirement, the investment strategy is a result of your retirement income plan.
It is. And it really does not lead your retirement income plan. It is a follow through of your retirement income plan. Retirement income planning is literally a math problem that really deals with income as opposed to assets. And so building up a bunch of assets is great and is essential to a successful retirement. But having that income strategy is where you really need to be honed in on. So our Ready to Retire process is built to make sure that you've got guaranteed income to take care of very predictable expenses that are going to come down the pike. So what does that look like? Food, clothing, transportation, shelter, taxes, insurance. We can name several things that are essential to life. If you're going to pay for that with retirement income, you very likely want to pay with guaranteed income sources. Because if you don't do that, then those essentials are in question as to whether or not they can be funded. If your investment plan works out, then great, you can fund those essential expenses. But if your investment plan doesn't work out, then you've got a problem, and that's a problem that's not discretionary, it's essential. And so you've got to think about it that way, first of all, and then you have to think about using your assets to fund what I would call the desired income or the extras, mm-hmm. the inflation adjustments that you're going to need through retirement. All of those things can be easily funded from the variable income that you would get from your investments, but not the essential income that you need to pay those required expenses.
Yeah. So your investment strategy, Whitney, should be to turn your assets into lifetime income. So when, how do you do that? Well, I want everybody to listen to this because Whitney's saying she's a few years away from retirement. If you're listening today and you're a few years of retirement away from retirement, you are entering the retirement red zone. Your investment strategy has very likely been through the accumulation years, growth. You are looking at building that wealth and growing your account value. But the strategy when you enter the retirement red zone, which we define as being about 5 to 10 years away from your retirement date, has to change. We use the football analogy here. You probably heard us talk about it before, but the game from an offensive perspective is called differently between the 20-yard lines than it is from the 20-yard line in. The game is smaller. The space is shorter. The offensive coordinators will tell you the play calling has to change, and it has to change in the retirement red zone too. And we'll go over a little bit just generally, John, what has to change. You can't be all in on growth because of the volatility that goes with being invested in those types of investments. And when you're pulling out money on a monthly basis, again, turning your assets into income, volatility is your worst nightmare.
It really is. And volatility is one of those things that you don't know it's going to happen until it does. And then if you're in a volatile state and your account balance is going down and you're having to redeem money out of that account balance to fund a monthly income to yourself, then you're really making bad matters worse, so to speak. You're going to see that account balance really drop when you combine the downturn in the market and the withdrawals that you're taking. That's why you do have to, for part of your portfolio, kind of eschew growth, because you don't need that money growing. You need it very stable. But Scott, I think on the other side of the spectrum, and where people kind of get confused in this, is that you still have to have a growth component because of what we've run into in the last 2 or 3 years, and that is rising prices. Inflation really requires you to have a strategy whereby you can increase your income going forward. And you've got to have growth mechanisms in your portfolio to be able to do that. We call it the bucketing strategy here at GenWealth. It is part of our Ready to Retire process. And it literally is dividing up on a timeline your assets so that those near-term assets that you're going to use in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years are not exposed to market growth, but the assets that you would use, let's say 15 years plus down the road, you do want those exposed to market growth, and you also have that added benefit of time to mitigate the volatility that you could run into.
Yeah, the biggest difference, I think, if I can lay it out in one sentence, between traditional retirement planning and the bucketing strategy is we're not talking about asset allocation. We're talking about income allocation.
That's right.
Specific number of dollars put into a specific investment strategy earmarked for specific years of use. And depending on what years those are, determines what type of volatility, what type of risk that you could take on because of the time horizon associated with it.
And let's talk about this legacy bucket for just a second. I think Whitney referred to the fact that she wants to leave a good sum of money to their kids and their children. So kids and grandkids involved there. Two ways to do this. One is a legacy bucket, meaning that it is not part of your income plan, but it is simply a growth strategy that you will be able to be passed on to your kids and grandkids. Now, in this day and time, Scott, I think that is best used with either Roth IRA money or non-qualified money, because there is a requirement under the Secure Act for qualified money to actually be spent within 10 years of your death, and not spent, but actually exposed to taxes within right. 10 years of your death. And so there are some things there that we can get into the nuances of, but you can have a bucketing strategy. But I think also that you want to think about the potential of using life insurance, because life insurance provides leverage, meaning that you're going to spend a little bit of money, relative small amount of money, to give a big benefit. But you're also going to be in a situation where that benefit to them is 100% tax-free. Life insurance is about the only vehicle that you can do that with, unless it's a Roth IRA. And a Roth IRA is something that I would endorse for a legacy bucket strategy. We do that all the time when we plan here at GenWealth.
I know we've gone long on this question, but just one more thing on that legacy bucket. When you talk about Roth IRA and non-retirement being the best types of accounts to pass on, someone may be listening thinking, well, I don't have a whole significant amount of that. So what do I do then? Well, you can have a robust withdrawal strategy from your IRA while you are living and get those dollars, maybe not into a Roth unless you're converting, but you can get them into a non-qualified account, because to your point, it has to be exposed to taxes. It doesn't have to be spent. You can reinvest it and still grow it.
Very, very true.
All right. This is the question of the week. Congratulations to Whitney. We thank you for reaching out with that. Obviously, we like that question. We went almost 12 minutes on it. We could go another 12 pretty easily. But we would love to send you a free Get Ready for the Future Show tumbler for sending in that question. And all you have to do is email us, show@getreadyforthefuture.com, to claim it. And for those of you listening or watching, send us in a question. Maybe you could be the question of the week, and we'll give you a Get Ready for the Future Show tumbler. Rodney from Texarkana is next, and he writes, I'm 56 and believe I have a decent amount saved for retirement. There aren't any major health problems in my family history, and I know LTC policies are expensive. Should I get one anyway, or should I set that money aside for something else? It's a great question. I'm glad, Rodney, that you're thinking about it. Many people do not. Many people try to avoid it, and unless they've had personal experience, likely with their parents, needing long-term care, it is hard to visualize your need. But there is no question that long-term care planning is the elephant in the room when it comes to retirement planning for anybody, because they don't want to talk about it. It is a stick your head in the sand kind of mentality. So I'm glad Rodney's thinking about it. But when he says, I don't have any major health problems in my family history, but that could mean he's going to live a long life. And if he's going to live a long life, eventually there's probably a pretty good need for long-term care. In fact, John, we know the data, 70% of Americans are going to need some sort of long-term care in their lifetime.
Yeah, and I think that you've got to think about it this way. If you're going to spend money on something, would you rather do it at the full price or with discounted dollars? Mm. Because if you think about it from a standpoint of what insurance actually does, you're paying some money toward the cost of that benefit versus the full cost of that benefit. That's the whole idea of insurance. When you spend money on your car insurance, you're paying a small premium to keep from having to pay a big bill if you run into a tree or something with your car. So you clearly have got to be in that kind of mindset to think about this. Scott, we've heard this kind of question. Well, shouldn't I just save that money? Because by the time I get to be that age, I'll have spent X number of dollars on that. But they're not really thinking about the cost of long-term care mm-hmm. in future dollars. Right mm-hmm. now, you know, a full-time nursing home benefit is probably $6,000 to $7,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And let's say you're 60 years old, in maybe 20 years, you're going to need that benefit. That could be $10,000 to $15,000 a month for that kind of care at that time. So people don't think about that in terms of, oh, it's going to be, I can't outrun this thing. I've got to find a way to leverage my way into covering that, as opposed to just stacking up cash to try to take care of it in the future.
Yeah.
I will say one other thing about this, Scott. We have a number of clients at GenWealth that have long-term care. We have some clients that don't have it because they just don't want to deal with it. If you want to clear a room, just start talking about long-term care. Right. But we have some clients that are wealthy enough that they can self-insure. But I don't think that if you're trying to save the money to get there,
right.
I don't think that's the way to do it. I think if you have the assets, you can segregate some of your assets to go toward that long-term care benefit. But I don't think that's something that you can actually try to outrun, so to speak.
Yeah, Rodney, if you were 26 instead of 56, maybe you got the time. As long as you're funding your retirement as well to set aside some money for long-term care. But the time from 56 to when you're going to need it, it's going to be very hard to set aside on a routine basis and have the amount of money you're going to need. So let's talk a little bit about, before we move on, the types of long-term care policies that are available, because I do think this is a good education point for people who are listening, and maybe they're like Rodney, they're thinking about whether they need to get a long-term care policy. You know, the traditional policy is what most people are familiar with, and that one is a use it or lose it proposition. We know that, right? You pay a premium whenever you start the policy or when you begin the policy, and if you don't ever have a long-term care need and you die suddenly in your sleep, then all those premium dollars are not recovered in most cases. And the other downside to the potential downside to a traditional policy is that it may not be a level premium. What you pay when Rodney's 56 may not be what Rodney pays when he's 66. So there are challenges to getting into a traditional policy. They are right for some people, but there are also other types of policies available.
Yeah, there are. And these are hybrid long-term care life insurance policies or an accelerated benefit on a life insurance policy that is triggered by a long-term care event. There's several options out there in the marketplace, and you really have to just look through that and figure out which one is right for you. But most of the time, Scott, a lot of the negatives that you were talking about traditional long-term care policies, like the price goes up as you get older, that doesn't happen with a hybrid policy. Those premiums are locked in because they are a life insurance policy premium. So you're not going to change the premium that is being paid on that life insurance policy, or the company's not going to change it for you. So that's a benefit. You have a very clearly defined benefit. Let's say the face amount of the policy is $300,000. Well, that's a pool of money that's there for your long-term care. When it's depleted, it's depleted. But if you don't use all of that $300,000, then the remaining amount of that $300,000, as an example, would go to your family in terms of a tax-free death benefit. So if someone used $100,000 of long-term care benefit from that policy, there would still be a $200,000 death benefit from the life insurance policy. So there's some advantages there as well. So part of this really boils down, Scott, to whether or not the premium is affordable to you and whether or not you can sustain that premium throughout your life. And yeah, you have to not only look, as you said, on those traditional policies of what the premium is now, look at what the rates have done, because there is some traditional long-term care policies that we've seen that have increased as much as 30 or 40% in a year because the insurance company didn't price it right in the beginning and they saw claims experience come in that they didn't expect. And so they boosted the rates on their existing policyholders.
Now, one thing Rodney says here, should I get one anyway? And I would say, no, don't get one just to get one. You know, that's the other thing. I would say, stop for just a second and do some planning. You know, you say you have a decent amount saved for retirement, but what does that really mean? How do you know, again, back to the first question earlier today, how do you know how your assets can be turned into income? Go through the ready-to-retire process and to build that retirement income plan so you know on a monthly basis what's going to be coming to you. And do you need all of your assets to provide that income for the rest of your life? If you do, then there might be some wiggle room to build that long-term care policy premium into your monthly income. If you have more assets than you need, if you've overfunded retirement in the sense that what your goals are for income, you have more than enough assets to cover that, that's when we begin to talk to clients about self-insuring, creating a bucket for long-term care over to the sidelines, not included in your monthly income plan, but that can be in a moderate investment strategy and grow over time so that it can be there when you need it. Thanks for the question, Rodney. And next up, it's Remy via email. He writes to us, what's the difference between a fixed and variable annuity, and how do I know which, if any, I need? Remy, we're going to need two more shows. That's a big question. Yes.
If you get us started, here you go.
Yeah, you know, so just the fact that he writes the word annuity, I know that creates one of two reactions likely in people. People are very curious, want to know more about it. Sometimes people put the roadblock up right away, right? They hear that word annuity and they've heard stuff on TV, on advertisements. People who are trying to sell them something besides an annuity, right, are trying to steer them away from that. And there are bad annuities and there are annuities that can be used for good purposes in your planning. But when it comes to just fixed and variable, let's get into just the question for Remy there. You know, to say all annuities are bad is wrong. At its base, if you're going to say all annuities, there's really only one thing that all annuities do, and that's provide tax deferral.
That's right. And in that process of providing tax deferral, meaning that you don't pay taxes on the earnings that that annuity makes in the current year, in the process of it, the question becomes, is this annuity in the stock market or is this annuity earning interest that is paid by an insurance company? So anything that happens with a fixed annuity is interest that is being paid by the insurance company. And that interest is paid based on the claims paying ability of that insurance company. The asset actually belongs to the insurance company and they are paying you interest to hold on to that asset. And then they can turn it into an income stream or a lot of different things that you can do with that. But that is essentially what a fixed annuity is. Now, a variable annuity has investments much like mutual funds. They are technically called separate accounts. And those mutual funds or separate accounts are invested in the stock market, in the bond market, and other variable investment instruments. And they give you the opportunity to earn growth, but they also give you risk involved in it, meaning that the value of those can fluctuate up and down. Now, a lot of annuities in the variable range have what they call income riders on them that create guarantees in terms of income to you. Some annuities create guarantees in terms of what your future value will be in the variable space. So the insurance company is taking on the investment risk to some degree. So there's some complexity to that. The key here is that you find someone that can sit down and look at your situation and use the right tool for the right situation. Scott, I've said on this show many times, one of my favorite movies is Gran Torino from Clint Eastwood. And there's a line in there where he's teaching his neighbor boy about his tools. And he says, you got to use the right tool for the right job. You can't use a hammer on where you need a screwdriver or something like that. And so that's really where I think annuities get a bad rap, is that we've had people that are in the financial business try to sell an annuity to fix almost any problem. But in reality, an annuity is good for one of two things. It's either tax deferral or providing consistent guaranteed income, one of the two. That's usually how we use them here at GenWealth, and they are very specific tools for very specific tasks.
Yeah, so why do people not like them? Well, you do have to know that they do come with a surrender period. That's not necessarily a reason not to like them, but you do know, as John has already mentioned, you're going to have to lock that money up for a certain period of time. And that could be 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And some are excessively long. We would certainly steer you away from 17, 18 year surrender periods.
And we've seen those.
And those do exist for sure. So again, back to not all annuities are created equal. And those riders do come with fees. There's no question about it that if you're going to get guarantees associated with an investment product, you're going to likely have to pay for it. And a lot of people out there that are giving the annuities a bad rap are talking about those fees when they're doing it. But determining if an annuity is right for you, when Remy writes to us, how do I know which, if any, I need? Because there are places for annuities and there are places where, or there are times in your life, there are strategies that you may have that you don't need an annuity. But I would say working with a financial advisor to build a plan, and that plan is looking for an outcome. How are you going to reach your goal? That may include an annuity that can help you achieve your goal, but you may not need an annuity to achieve your goal. So each individual is different. But as an example, we can talk about this in the role that it plays here at GenWealth through the Ready to Retire process, is in your required income that we talked about earlier in the show. If you have $5,000 of monthly expenses that you know you're going to have in retirement, and your guaranteed income sources, when you total them all up, only total $4,000, then you have a $1,000 monthly required income gap. It is not okay if you have $5,000 going out of your checking account and only $4,000 coming in, and the $1,000 gap needs to be replaced with secured, guaranteed monthly income. And that is an example of how you might use one of the income riders that are associated with an annuity.
Absolutely. And I think that anytime you say never on anything, you probably need to walk away from that situation. And that really does apply in financial products. There are no good or bad financial products. They're just tools out there. Whether they are used for good or bad is really up to the people who are applying those products to the situation. So I think that you've got to kind of take all of that annuity talk with a grain of salt and sit down with someone who, number one, has your best interest at heart and has a fiduciary responsibility to you to help you walk through this and get some clarity about what it is that you're needing to do. And that's how we run things at GenWealth, and that's how we are able to sustain guaranteed income to people over their lifetime, is by utilizing an annuity to transfer that risk to the insurance company for that provision of that income.
If you'd like to learn more, we've talked about the GenWealth Ready to Retire process almost in every question on the show today. If you'd like to learn more about what that means, you can call toll-free 866-653-PLAN. It's 866-653-7526 to ask questions of a financial advisor here at GenWealth. Set up an appointment with a GenWealth financial advisor. We'd be glad to walk you through it. And that first appointment doesn't cost anything to come in. It can be just a conversation about how we might be able to help you reach your retirement goals. Well, it is time for our last question, and it comes to us from Greg via text message. He writes, "What are the parameters for backdoor Roth contributions? Do you recommend them? What should I be concerned about?" All right, Greg, thanks very much. Yep, backdoor Roth is something we've talked about on this show before. It is an option for higher income earners who make too much to contribute to a Roth IRA. We love the Roth IRA. We talk about that week in and week out. If any way you can get as many dollars into that Roth IRA, the better, right? Because you have tax-free withdrawals. It's flexible, doesn't count against your earned income in retirement. You can pass it on, as John talked about earlier, as a legacy, and your kids are not going to have to pay taxes on it. But it becomes difficult just when you're starting to get to the point in life where you can really go after that Roth IRA, because you have more money, you start to phase out potentially from being eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA. In fact, in 2024, the income limits are $161,000 of annual income for a single tax filer and $240,000 for married filing jointly. Now, there's a little bit of a phase out range where you can still contribute partially, but then you completely phase out and cannot get money directly into the Roth. So, John, let's talk about this backdoor Roth as a way to still get money into one.
Yeah, and I want to be sure that we clarify that we're not talking about a Roth conversion here where you can make a conversion of a significant lump sum of money. We're talking about your annual contribution. Mm-hmm. And so for a backdoor Roth, you can contribute to a traditional IRA. Even if you can't deduct it, you can contribute to that traditional IRA, which there are, by the way, zero income limits on. It doesn't matter who you are. Warren Buffett can contribute to a traditional IRA. He just can't deduct it. So then you convert those dollars into Roth dollars. And specifically, we think about this from the standpoint of putting, let's say, $7,000 into a traditional non-deductible IRA, and then immediately converting that before it's ever invested, so you don't generate any taxable income from that conversion because the principal has already been taxed. You haven't deducted it, so you convert it, and then that goes into a Roth, and that allows you to grow that money on a tax-deferred basis. And when you withdraw money out of that converted Roth, you can do so on a tax-free basis. And so you can use that same Roth IRA each year to do your backdoor contributions into the traditional, from the traditional IRA into the Roth IRA to continue to contribute. This is a lot of hoop jumping, Scott, because Congress didn't have any clarity when they put these limits on Roth contributions.
Right.
They said, oh, well, you can still do this and then that. Well, why did you put a limit on it? Because now you're just having to jump through all these hoops to make that contribution, but that's how you get it done.
Yeah. Now, things to know about this, because yes. Greg mentions, what do I need to be concerned about? Greg, if you have other traditional IRA money, this may not be something you want to do. We look for it in clients who do not have any other traditional IRA money, meaning all of their other pre-tax dollars exist in their 401k. They haven't done a rollover to an IRA. The reason that is because if you do that conversion, if you contribute to the traditional IRA and then immediately convert to a Roth, if you have other IRA money, there is a very complicated formula that has to be used to determine how much taxes you're going to owe. You're going to have to aggregate some of those other traditional IRA dollars and include them on the conversion.
Yeah, you run into a lot of issues with this if you have other IRA dollars out there, and it's something that you definitely want to get some tax advice either from your financial advisor or your tax preparer to help you walk through this situation, because if you don't do that, then you're going to end up with an unintentional, very large tax bill. And that's what you're really trying to avoid when you do these Roth IRA backdoor contributions. You're trying to put money into a situation where you can create tax-free income in retirement. And Scott, we haven't really talked about the why behind this,
yeah.
But really, tax-free income in retirement is probably one of the best things that you can have, because not only do you not pay tax on the income, it helps you in terms of what might be charged in terms of taxes on your Social Security as well.
Yeah, so any withdrawal from that Roth IRA is not going to hurt you on your other taxable dollars as well. And then we like it for lump sum purchases. Maybe somebody needs to replace a car, take a big trip. You can pile that on top of your income that you took out in any given year and not have to worry about jumping the tax bracket. So it's very useful in that way.
Yeah, and so let's put some legs on that for just a second. You know, if you have traditional IRA money and you want to go and spend $50,000, let's say, on a vehicle, then you're going to need to withdraw about $75,000, pay the taxes to net 50. So that takes a big chunk out of your engine that is producing your retirement income. But if you happen to have a few $100,000 over in a Roth IRA, you can probably buy as many vehicles as you need throughout your retirement, never pay tax on the money that is being pulled from that, and it does not interrupt your retirement income engine over here that is producing your regular monthly income. So we love it when clients have Roth IRAs. We love it when clients come to us with Roth IRAs. We help clients convert money out of a traditional to a Roth. So ultimately, they've got access to that pool of money for those lump sum purchases that they kind of want to make in retirement, because folks don't like paying interest when they're in retirement.
One final note here as we get closing in on our final bell. Sometimes we get this question too. If you are eligible at work through your employer plan for a Roth 401k, you start to hear that sometimes. There are no income limits on that. You're going to be eligible for the Roth 401k. And if you can contribute to a Roth IRA, you can actually do both. You can get $7,000 into a Roth IRA, and you can get the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k up into the maximum too, depending on your age. It could be between $23,000 and $30,000 a year.
Scott, as we heard the final bell, I want to really make the point that this relationship that we have with our clients here at GenWealth is not a transactional relationship. It is a journey. And part of that journey is education. We're going to educate you when you come in. We're going to educate you about your various options that you have as far as providing retirement income is concerned. We're also really broad-based educating people along the way in terms of just general education. And I would really call on people to go to our website at getreadyforthefuture.com/academy and check out the events that we've got going on throughout the year. We'll have more events posted as time goes on. Go back there fairly frequently and check out the topics that we're doing workshops on and things of that nature. That is part of the GenWealth experience that we're creating to provide you a method of being able to discover, protect, and share true financial independence.
You know, we talked about a lot today, and every time we do a show, I think about how complicated the retirement landscape is, continuing to get more complicated seemingly every day. You really need a partner to get through it, to plan for it, and live it. And if you would like to go through the GenWealth Ready to Retire process, We'd like to be that partner for you. You can call us 866-653-PLAN to set up your first complimentary appointment with a Gen Wealth advisor. That's 866-653-PLAN or 866-653-7526. And that is all the time we have for this week's Get Ready for the Future show. If you have questions, we want you to get them to us, and maybe we'll answer it right here on the air next week. Just call or text to 501-381-5228 or email it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com.
Thank you for listening to the Get Ready for the Future show. If you enjoy hearing from the Gen Wealth team every week, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help us get the word out on building toward financial independence, share the podcast with your friends and family. The Gen Wealth financial team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or call our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Gen Wealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.